Okay. But I must say, I'm so impressed that everybody is here timely. I love that. I'm going to go ahead and call the February 20th Rules Committee meeting to order. And Madam Secretary, will you establish a quorum?
Yes. Senators Grove, Monning.
Here.
Monning here. Roth.
Here.
Roth here. Wilk.
Present.
Wilk here. Atkins.
Here.
Atkins here. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We're going to get right into it. It looks like I would be happy to entertain a motion from any member of the committee. We could set a consent calendar. Unless people disagree, it looks like we could move item 2, 3, and 4 through 8.
So moved.
Okay, seeing no opposition to that, Madam Secretary, will you call the roll on items 2 through 8?
Senators Grove, Monning. Monning, aye. Roth.
Aye.
Roth, aye. Wilk.
Aye.
Wilk, aye. Atkins.
Aye.
Atkins, aye.
And Madam Secretary, I would ask that we leave the roll open so that our colleague can weigh in should she like when she arrives. Okay, we will go ahead and move to item number 1, governor's appointments required to appear. And let me invite Susan Finelli, who is the Chief Deputy State Department of Public Health appointee forward. And welcome. You're our actually first required to appear appointment in 2019. So we want to welcome you and give you the opportunity, if you'd like to introduce yourself, any friends and family that might be with you, and make your opening statement. And then we will go right into comments and questions from the committee.
So I have with me today my parents, Lorraine and Chisidio Finelli, and my partner, Joe Davis, and our daughter, Jessica Finelli Davis, in the audience.
Welcome. And before you start on your comments, let me, for the record, recognize that Ms. Grove is here. And we will come back and let you vote after we take up our appointee. Go ahead, Ms. Finelli.
So good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I'm Susan Finelli, Chief Deputy Director of Policy and Programs for the California Department of Public Health. I would like to first thank the governor for the opportunity to serve at the California Department of Public Health, and also to thank the Rules Committee and legislative staff for their role in the confirmation process. It's both a challenging and exciting time for public health, with a strong commitment to addressing the social determinants of health in order to improve the health outcomes and resiliency of our people, our families, and our communities. I plan to work diligently to support and contribute to the mission of the Department of Public Health to optimize the health and well-being of the people of California. I have served in a variety of leadership roles in the 15 years that I've been with the department, including the Deputy Director of the Emergency Preparedness Office, as the Assistant Director of the department, and for the past 10 months as the Chief Deputy over Policy and Programs. I see my priorities as working across our many programs to better meet the needs of our local jurisdictions and the communities they serve, particularly during emergencies such as wildfires and other infectious diseases, to align those programs around a single organizational culture and set of shared priorities, and finally, to ensure that the department's work is informed by open communication, not only with our local health jurisdictions, but also with the many stakeholders and the people we represent. I'm committed to our mission, to our team, and to the health of the people of California, and want to thank the committee members for your time today.
Thank you very much. Senator Monning, would you like to let you? Yes, go ahead and start, Mr. Monning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, Ms. Finelli. Thank you for joining us today, and thank you for your service to the state of California. To date, we had an opportunity to meet yesterday, and you addressed a lot of my questions. I'm going to ask a few today just for the benefit of the committee and those that might be listening in. One of the areas that you have oversight are inspections for long-term care facilities in the Los Angeles area. I know there's a backlog of investigation of complaints. I know it's been of concern to many members as well as to you. Could you give us an update on the pathway to clearing some of that backlog of complaints?
So right now, there is a backlog of about 5,000 complaints in Los Angeles County for the facilities that are located in LA County. And we are working diligently to address those. We've been negotiating a new contract with LA County to provide them with the resources they need to take on 100% of the work for the healthcare facilities located in Los Angeles County. Yesterday, we got a settlement on the final issue I was working on with Los Angeles County. And so they will be ramping up their staff over the next couple of years to make sure that they have the resources they need to address those complaints. It's important to recognize that we deal with the most egregious complaints very quickly. Some of these complaints are the minor, you know, less important or not important, but less egregious complaints. And so what we'll be doing over the next couple of years with LA County is as they get a new complaint in a facility, they'll be looking at the other complaints that are in that facility and sort of getting an economy of scale. So when you go into a facility, you not only deal with the complaint that's new, but you also look at the other complaints that may be for that same facility. And thereby, we can decrease the backlog a little bit quicker.
And so LA County works under contract.
Correct.
Your department. In that contract, there's, I assume, certain performance obligations or targets, which
yes, so we are
with the backlog.
Yes, and so in their contract, we have a series of workload metrics, quality metrics, and customer service metrics. And so part of that contract is to not only deal with the new complaints within the new timeline, which is a 60-day timeline for new complaints coming in, but over a three-year period to reduce the backlog of those complaints as well.
And again, will you remind the committee if a complaint is received that represents a threat to life or safety, how is that handled?
So we prioritize those, and we're usually in a facility within a couple of days to look at the those immediate jeopardy kinds of events.
And would there be a circumstance where it would require getting there even more quickly than a couple?
Sometimes we'll even go in on a weekend or a night, depending on how egregious the issue is. And if we are worried, we'll go in there immediately.
Thank you. And then I know over the years and during some of our budget challenges in the past, the field hospitals, the mobile field hospitals that California had operated, and I think part of that is under your purview under the Emergency Preparedness Office. Could you share with us what the status is of those emergency field hospitals?
So we work very closely with our colleagues at the Emergency Medical Services Authority, and we run a joint operations center together. And the mobile field hospitals are now, they're under EMSA's jurisdiction, and what they have done is to put them out in the field so that we've broken up what were once large mobile field hospitals as we lost funding and put them in the six mutual aid regions within some of our counties. And we've been able to use them during the wildfires as sort of the medical shelters. And so in the most recent Butte County fires, we were able to set some of those tents up in order to isolate those who become ill and treat them outside of the general population shelter. And so I think it's been a good success story. They're more closely located in each of the mutual aid regions so we can get them there quicker.
Thank you. That's reassuring. I'm sorry we're needing to deploy them, but it's important that they are available. I think my final area of questioning, you have oversight over multiple programs. You offered some reassurance yesterday that many of those kind of programs are within, consolidated under different administrative combinations. One of the areas that we talked about is the current progress or challenges in the infectious disease sector, particularly uptake of vaccinations in schools. Could you provide us a current update of both progress and continued challenges?
Sure. So with the passage of SB 277, which eliminated the personal belief exemption, we worked really hard across the state to educate and to provide information on how that law should be implemented. And we really saw an increase in the number of vaccinations throughout the state. And that, you know, really was a protective factor. And now, only recently, we've seen an uptick in medical exemptions. And so we're concerned about that because although it's a small uptick, it does occur in some schools where it leaves a large number of unvaccinated children. And so looking for the public health risk of that, we want to identify those schools where the vaccination rate is under the 95%, which we think is sort of what you need to protect the population. And so because some schools do have a large number of unvaccinated children, we are collecting data. They have to report, each school is required to report their vaccination rate, and we'll be looking at those schools where they have a lower vaccination rate, collecting the medical exemptions, and looking at whether there are particular locations or doctors that might be in need of some special education or some further information from either the local health jurisdiction or from our department to make sure that they understand the need for vaccination. And in the event that there are bad actors, then we can take other actions.
And are there standards or criteria for doctors to be able to sign in a medical exemption?
There are. Protocols? The statute is specific about specific requirements that they need to meet in order to meet the medical definition.
And it would be under the purview of the Department of Public Health to periodically review the issuance of those medical exemptions?
We would go through the schools, so we don't look at all of them, but what we would look at is the public health risk. So where we believe the vaccination rate is low enough that it presents a public health risk, we would look at it from that perspective. The medical board would be more apt in terms of actual particular doctors and looking at that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your answers, and I was impressed with your command and knowledge of multiple programs within the Department of Public Health, and thank you for your service. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Grove.
Thank you. I apologize for being late. Welcome. I did not have the opportunity to spend time with you yesterday or the couple of days ago because of scheduling conflicts, but I would like to schedule time with you in the future because I do have a series of questions that affect the Valley, especially dealing with Valley fever, that I would like to know your opinions on and your thought process and how we're going to address that. But just to start, last year's budget provided funding for research and outreach on Valley fever. Can you tell me the status of those funds and if they've been distributed for research?
So the research funds didn't actually come to us. The research funds went to the Kern Medical Center. We got funding to run a public information education campaign. Okay. And we are right now evaluating the vendor contracts, the bids that came in, and we'll be awarding a contract next month.
Okay. Specifically, the things that I want to talk to you about, and I know we'll talk to you about it in private, but just so you know kind of where I'm going with this, is the Department of Public Health made a statement regarding Title 8, Section 5144 on endemic areas for Valley fever, and I'm gravely concerned about those statements, and I'd like to have a private conversation. If we could get together, I'd really, really appreciate that. And then I have a question. I don't know if the chair, as the Madam Pro Tem, are you going to talk about San Diego and the outbreak? I just was curious about.
I am, but feel free to ask the questions. I'll ask whatever I feel I need to that you don't.
Oh, okay.
Please go right
so
ahead.
So I guess my question was, is that in implementing the state auditor's recommendations on the recent report of the hepatitis A outbreak in San Diego, where are you out? I apologize. I need to slow down. That was very descriptive. So, Ms. Finelli, where are you at in implementing the auditor's recommendations for its recent report on the hepatitis A outbreak in San Diego?
So we had two findings.
Okay.
And one was to update our emergency operations manual, which is basically to put a little bit more detail on the emergency powers that public health officers have. And so that has been done, and we've updated our emergency plan. The second was to create an outbreak response plan with a little more detail, and we have done that as well. And what they wanted was to have some specific parameters around what are the strategies, how quickly, what are the deliverables, so that in our conversations with our local jurisdictions, that we, from the get-go, sort of have a project plan almost in terms of the specific activities that will be undertaken. And so we have completed that as well.
Great, thank you. I appreciate your answering those questions.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Roth.
Thank you, Madam Pro Tem. Ms. Finelli, first, congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, I noted in our Rules Committee notes that you have identified obesity, diabetes, and mental health as key priorities for the department moving forward in the future. And as far as some of us are concerned, particularly with respect to type 1 diabetes, there's a significant need for further education efforts in the state due to incidences of misdiagnosis and the like, particularly with young children. And in the area of mental health, due to a fairly significant disparity in mental health funding, particularly under the 1991 realignment for mental health funding in various areas of the state, there's a need for, in my opinion, mental health funding parity. So given the priorities that you've identified for the department, particularly those with respect to diabetes and mental health, what are your plans?
So right now for mental health, we have a series of activities that we are doing. One is the California Reducing Disparities Project, and that program is around 5 different population areas and really working with community level folks on the ground to look at populations from Asian populations, African American, LGBTQ, and really looking at those populations and communities that have promising practices that may not be have been able to qualify for big grant programs and things, but working with them because we think they have good ideas and learning from them and getting them the resources they need to conduct real evaluation, collect data, so that we can over time see what actually is working on the ground. And so we're in our second year of a 5-year set of pilot projects, and I think that we have an overall evaluation strategy so that everybody, regardless of the type of program that they're running, everybody will collect some standard data so that we can see what works and why it works. And I think that's a big effort that we're underway on the mental health side. Many of our programs in our maternal and child and adolescent health also address mental health services. So our home visiting program, part of what we're trying to do to improve the outcomes of mothers and babies is really to look at not just healthcare and access to healthcare, but those community linkages that can build resiliency in our population and things like stress management and linkage to mental health services can really build that in our population. And so I think those are some of the things we're doing on mental health. We're also working with our stakeholders under the Let's Get Healthy California project, our state health improvement plan, and mental health comes up across the board with many of our stakeholders as an area where we want to work more closely together to address and hopefully have some collective impact around those issues. On diabetes, unfortunately, we don't receive a lot of money to deal with diabetes, but we have a program called Prevention Forward, where we are trying to make sure that we're working with our clinical partners and Medi-Cal and DHCS and to identify and diagnose diabetes much earlier to educate people, because not only diabetes, but those with pre-diabetes and trying to keep them from getting diabetes. So we have an awareness campaign, we have a website of information, and we're working, partnering with healthcare to make sure that we can move that forward.
Well, the reason I ask is, and I'm sure you are aware, as you know, type 2 diabetes, exercise, diet, is much different than type 1, which is an autoimmune disease. And very difficult to diagnose and frequently misdiagnose, particularly in children. And so I would ask you to take a look at the opportunities that you have in your department to perhaps embark on a public education campaign, whether it's the public generally or the healthcare practitioners, to make sure that we don't have some of the misdiagnoses that we have experienced in the past.
And we did get $2.5 million for a diabetes awareness campaign, which will be coming up shortly. And so I'll take that back and make sure that we're thinking about that as well.
Perfect. Congratulations again, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Pro Tem.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Pro Tem. Enjoyed our conversation yesterday. It was very wide-ranging, and I agree with Senator Monning. You certainly have a grasp of the issues, and I also appreciate a lot of your questions, which actually you asked the questions I wanted to ask, but I wanted to do a follow-up on the vaccinations. So I've been vaccinated, as is my wife and my children, so I'm pro-vaccination. When we had the whole SB 277, I have met with families that have had children that suffered, you know, vaccination damage. So I do know it exists. What I'm curious on the data, though, Could it be, you think it's people are avoiding it, or do you think people can't find the documentation, so it's just easier to ask for a medical exemption, and then maybe those vaccination rates are higher than what we think? I'm just curious.
I don't have the exact data, but I do think there are people who are, instead of using a personal belief exemption, are looking to get a medical exemption because they don't want the vaccination. But I think there are also people who genuinely need the medical exemption. And so that's one of the things we want to look at as we're collecting that data, because on the exemption, it will list why they've granted the medical exemption. And I think we want to take a look at that.
Okay, great. Well, again, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chairman. To follow along on the hepatitis A outbreak in San Diego, that then ultimately there were cases in Santa Cruz and Los Angeles, I want to understand, and I understand the counties have a responsibility to declare an emergency. There are actions that need to be taken. However, this was a very long period of time in which there was inaction. There was an audit. I think we got to read that. But my concern is, and I kind of want to understand, when does the Department of Public Health step in when a county is not doing what it needs to do? This was a long period of months. I even made a call to the governor's office as those numbers started to increase from, you know, the 587 cases and 402 hospitalizations. So my worry is, at what point, how do you monitor a county's response when you become aware of a pending situation and there is not the most responsible action taken on the part of a county or a jurisdiction?
So I think it's important to recognize that in San Diego County, we were working with the local health jurisdiction daily throughout probably most of that period, and looking at what were the strategies that they were using for hygiene and sanitation and vaccination of the at-risk population. And so we were working hand in hand with the county. We were strategizing. They were doing a lot of work throughout that period. I think we activated our emergency operations system under our emergency plan when multiple counties are impacted. And that is when we would then activate our emergency operations center, bring together all of the counties, share that information, make sure that we're collecting. It is a reportable disease. We collect that data. We had been collecting that data, working with them, and it became, I think we continued that work. We worked with them on the vaccine distribution, prioritization of vaccine, making sure that they had all the tools and knowledge that they needed to get out there and vaccinate a new population. This was something new. We hadn't seen Hep A in our homeless population, IV drug users. So I think we were learning a lot, along with many other states. And I think if you look at the Midwest and Michigan and other states, they were facing the same thing. And I'm part of a lot of the ASTO policy committee, and we were comparing numbers and really looking at the ability to turn the tide on the outbreak. And California did a pretty good job. We did better than most of the other states with smaller populations, and the outbreaks lasted longer and were bigger. So I think that there was a lot of important work being done, and can we always go back and say, could we have done a little more, a little sooner? I don't know. But I think that they were doing a lot of work on the ground to mitigate the impact of and lessen the outbreak.
Wow. Well, we're going to have to disagree on that. They failed miserably, which is why there was an audit. When a legislator gets involved to ask for an audit on a real situation, not one that we contrive, which I know that we want to do at times, a plan of action and education, that can go down. A plan of action and education does not suggest that you send homeless people to clinics. When there's a problem, you got to go on the streets and do the work, which ultimately we did. I mean, we're talking a period of months, at which point, I guess when the county fails, when the city fails, and the state is not a backup, that concerns me. And this This example, I agree, we hadn't seen anything like it for some time, but there is clear documentation, there is clear evidence that people were raising the red flag. And at some point, calls started to go to the state because the local jurisdiction wasn't acting. So for me, I think the implementation piece of this was what concerned me the most. And the fact that counties need to be held accountable. My own county, who I've had a wonderful working relationship with, and the city, it did not go well. If that's an example, I mean, once the vaccinations got there, once they decided to go onto the streets to actually find the people and go into the riverbeds, when the San Diego River Conservancy brings up the issue at one of their meetings, and by and far they are not the ones that should be talking about a public health issue at a board meeting, I have concerns about that, and maybe that's why there's a piece of legislation, which is not our purpose to talk about today in terms of accountability, but I am concerned about the response. I would just say, to conclude, your response didn't make me feel more comfortable about the situation. Because when the county fails to act and we put in a call to the backup, and to think that that response over a period of months was adequate, it really wasn't. So I hope the auditor's report will lend a little bit to help us move forward and work on some of these issues. On another topic, and I'm happy to hear your response to that as well. I want to be fair. And another area, the opioid epidemic, I know that there, it seems from the responses to questions, there's a lot of data being collected on how to approach that. I think I'm interested in implementation, moving to, and your perspective on what the state of California is doing or not doing and how you see the next steps related to handling quite a crisis that's across America, not just here in California.
So for the last couple of years, we've been leading the statewide opioid work group, and that is where we bring together multi-sectors from healthcare to public and private, so our sister departments and agencies, law enforcement, and really look at how we can act within the lanes that we work in and collectively address some of the issues so that we have better safe prescribing rules and guidance to physicians. We have medically assisted treatment options. We have about 2,000 deaths in California from overdoses every year. 70% of them or more are related to prescription opioids. And so really looking at safe prescribing, awareness, many times folks don't even know that what they're taking are opioids. And so there have been some efforts in other states to look at how do we, and with our public information campaign, to make sure that people really do understand which of the drugs that they might be taking are opioids, and then really working together to make sure that we are working at the local level to understand, you know, naloxone, distributing naloxone as the countermeasure to an overdose, making sure we have on our website a standing order for naloxone so that people can more readily get access to naloxone for their loved ones or in places where they might see somebody with an overdose. So we're working collectively. We are building. We've gotten some federal funding. We really think that what we need is timely and actionable data so that we can bring together EMS data real time along with our healthcare utilization data, our vital records data, and really better understand when and where this is happening so we can target our interventions and our public awareness. So I think we're also looking at laboratory testing and enhancing our laboratory testing for things like fentanyl to make sure that we understand when there is a problem or a crisis somewhere in the state.
Well, thank you. Questions or comments from anyone else? Okay. Thank you. Actually, we should go to speakers who may be here in support. I'll hold that motion for a moment, Senator. Is there anyone here who would like to come forward and speak in support of the appointment give me your name and...
Great. Michelle Gibbons with the County Health Executives Association of California. We represent local health departments throughout the state. We have had the pleasure of working with Ms. Finelli in a variety of capacities in all the roles that she has described before you. We find that she's highly capable. The level of partnership and communication that she has with the local level has been much appreciated. We've had to troubleshoot some really tough issues between their department and our local health departments. And we just have recognized that the level of communication and the accountability to follow up with us has always been there. So we would urge your confirmation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Kat DeBerg with the Health Officers Association of California, echoing everything that my colleague just said. Susan Finelli's breadth of knowledge is astounding, and we are really grateful to be working with her.
Thank you very much. Anyone in support? Anyone in opposition? Seeing none, I will entertain your motion now, Senator Roth. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Grove? Grove, aye. Monning?
Aye.
Monning, aye. Roth?
Aye.
Roth, aye. Wilk?
Aye.
Wilk, aye. Atkins?
Aye.
Atkins, aye. 5-0.
Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And... Madam Secretary, let me, for Ms. Grove's purposes, real quickly, lift the call on items one through
two.
I'm sorry, eight. Items two through eight.
Aye. Senator Grove, aye.
Thank you. Close the roll. 5-0 on those, the consent item or agenda. And I think we are going to take a moment, adjourn into executive session. So I'll give us a few minutes while we make that transition.